Welcome to Defenders, the teaching class of Dr. William Lane Craig. Today, the Doctrine of Creation, Part 16. For more resources from Dr. Craig, go to reasonablefaith.org.
For our lesson, we have been looking at the doctrine of creation, and particularly the problem of miracles. And last time, we looked at the collapse that occurred in Western culture of belief in miracles. And we trace this back to a picture of the universe which emerged from Newton's physics. The picture of the universe as a kind of world machine governed by the laws of Newton's physics, which seemed to leave no place for God. And you remember Laplace was able to boast that an infinite intelligence endowed with the knowledge of Newton's Principia and the exact position and momentum of every particle in the universe would be able to predict the exact state of the universe at any other time in the past or future. And when Napoleon asked Laplace what place God had in his system, Laplace famously replied, "Sire, I have no need of that hypothesis." God seemed to be extraneous. He was the creator of this great mechanism, this clockwork machine, but then he did not interfere with it or its operation by performing miracles in this machine. Now, I want to say something about this picture of the world as a Newtonian world machine before going on to look at the objections of Spinoza and Hume to miracles, because it will help us to sharpen our definition and understanding of what a miracle is. You remember, according to these post-Newtonians, a miracle could only be regarded as a violation of the laws of nature. God had established these immutable laws of nature, and if a miracle occurred, it was a violation of nature's laws, which seemed contrary to God's intelligence and power. Now, many people have said that the advent of modern physics subverts this picture of the Newtonian world machine. We no longer live in a sort of deterministic universe that was described by Newtonian physics. Indeed, in quantum physics, there is an element of indeterminacy in the world, in nature, that is ineliminable and inherent to it. We cannot, in fact, know the exact position of momentum of any particle in the universe. There's always a degree of fuzziness. There's always some indeterminacy. And therefore, it is in principle impossible to predict the exact state of the universe at some point in the past or in the future based on nature's laws and the knowledge of the present condition of the universe. The universe has this inherent indeterminacy built into it. And some have suggested that because this picture of a deterministic world is now gone from contemporary physics, this allows room for miracles on God's part. Well, I think that psychologically, the passing away of this deterministic picture of the universe might dispose folks to miracles emotionally. But really, any event that would be miraculous in Newtonian physics would be so extraordinarily improbable, even in quantum physics, that it would have to be regarded as miraculous if it actually occurred. In other words, quantum physics could open the door a tiny crack for allowing these anomalous events to occur, but in fact they would be so highly improbable that it really wouldn't allow much scope for the plausibility of identifying some event as a miracle. And in fact, by attributing miracles to just quantum indeterminacy, you threaten to turn miracles into freaks of nature, not acts of God, just the result of indeterminate random processes in the world, and that's surely not what we mean by a miracle. So while it is true that we no longer live in a universe that is governed by these deterministic laws, I don't think that really goes much distance toward a defense of the possibility and credibility of miracles. Rather, I think what we need to do is to challenge this idea that miracles are, properly speaking, violations of nature's laws. this is an extremely prejudicial description of a miracle. It connotes the idea of violating a civil law, or even worse, God's violating Mother Nature, which makes God look like he's engaged in some sort of criminal activity. So psychologically, the idea of God's violating the laws of nature is one I think that we could well be rid of psychologically. And when you examine what the laws of nature are, I think that in fact it becomes clear that miracles, properly speaking, are not violations of nature's laws. Why? Well, because nature's laws are statements of what will happen under certain ideal conditions. These are idealizations of what will happen given certain conditions. But very often those conditions don't obtain. For example, I'm told that I think it's potassium and chloride naturally combust. That would be a law of nature, that when combined, they produce combustion. But we have both of those elements in our body, and yet our bodies don't combust. Why not? Well, because there are other natural factors interfering with the combustion of these two elements, and so they can both safely be in our body. So what the laws of nature describe are highly idealized conditions of what would happen under those conditions. But if there are other natural factors interfering, then the predicted event won't occur. In other words, the laws of nature have within them certain implicit ceteris paribus conditions. That is to say, they describe what will happen, all things being equal. Ceteris paribus. They describe what will, all things being equal, happen under these idealized conditions. But if some natural agent or factor is interfering, then the conditions are not equal. Everything is not equal. The idealized conditions don't obtain, and therefore the predicted event will not occur. The law isn't violated. It doesn't break the law. But it just means the law doesn't imply because the ceteris paribus conditions don't obtain. Now, obviously, in the case of a miracle, if a supernatural agent is involved or interfering, then again, the law won't apply. So that these ceteris paribus conditions must not only include statements about natural agents not interfering, but also that there is no interference on the part of any supernatural agents that there might be as well. So the laws of nature are idealizations that describe what will happen if no natural or supernatural factors are interfering with the idealized conditions stated in the law. So when a miracle occurs, it doesn't violate the law of nature, because the law of nature assumes what will happen if there is no supernatural agent interfering with the operation. So miracles should not be described as violations of nature's laws. Rather, what is a miracle on this understanding? Well, a miracle would be an event which lies outside of the causal powers of nature at that particular time and place. At a particular time and place, the natural causes that are operative at that time and place do not have the productive capacity to produce that event. And so if that event occurs, that event would be ascribed to a supernatural agent. It would be a miracle. So to put it very simply, a miracle would be a naturally impossible event. It is an event which the natural causes at any time and place would not have the capacity to produce. Now, that means that miracles are relative to the time and place. For example, rain is not in and of itself miraculous. Relative to the causal factors at a certain time and place, rain is to be expected. But on another occasion, where the weather conditions are not adequate to produce rain, if someone like Elijah prays for rain, and all of a sudden it begins to rain, then that would be a miraculous event. At that time and place, the natural causes that are present are not adequate, do not have the adequate capacity to produce rain, so that if rain occurs, it would be a miraculous event attributed to a supernatural agent. So it seems to me that this is the correct way in which we ought to understand miracles. Miracles are not violations of nature's laws. Rather, miracles are events which lie outside the productive capacity of natural causes at any time and place. Now, if that's right, the next question would be, well, then what could make miracles possible? What would be the necessary condition for a miracle to occur? And the answer to that question seems obvious. God. If God exists, then miracles are possible. If there is a transcendent creator and designer of the universe who has brought all matter and energy into being and who has determined the laws of nature, then such a transcendent being would obviously have the capacity to produce events within nature which lie beyond the productive capacity of nature itself. Given the existence of God, miracles, it seems to me, are therefore obviously possible. So, in order to show that miracles are impossible, a person would have to show that atheism is true. You would have to have some sort of an argument for atheism, because as long as it's possible that God exists, you've got to be open to the possibility that God has acted miraculously in the universe. And of course, Orthodox theists do believe in the existence of God, a transcendent creator and designer of the universe, and therefore our belief in the possibility of miracles is perfectly rational. So in response to this Newtonian world machine, I think what we have to do is to define miracles properly, not as violations of nature's laws, but as simply events which are beyond the productive capacity of natural causes at a certain time and place, and that if God exists, then such events are obviously possible, and the question will then be, do we have any good evidence to think that such events have occurred? Any question or comment then about that response to the deterministic view of the world called the Newtonian world machine? Yes, Bruce.
I look at it as superseding natural order to do a miracle. Like when he raised Lazarus, I think maybe we talked about this example before, but he didn't, when Christ did that, he didn't stop dying, people from dying in all other parts of Judea or whatever, or the aging process or anything else, but he intervened and superseded the laws of nature to give Lazarus life back.
Yes, superseded the laws of nature. You're using that sort of language, and I think that's all right. You're not saying he violated the law in that case, but he did something which the causes described by the law couldn't themselves do. And in that sense, you say he superseded it. He did something that the laws of nature themselves wouldn't have predicted because the natural causes couldn't have brought it about. And this brings to mind another point. It's important to understand the laws of nature themselves don't cause anything. They don't do anything. The laws of nature are either just mathematical equations or propositional statements. They don't cause anything. The laws of nature don't causally interact with the universe. The laws of nature simply describe the operation of the natural causes in the universe. Things like gravitational force, electromagnetic force, mass, energy, and so forth. It's those things that are causally related to one another, and the laws of nature are simply descriptions in a certain propositional form of what lies within the productive capacity of nature. So when Bruce says he superseded the laws of nature, I think what you're saying properly is he is doing something which the causes, as described by nature's laws, couldn't have brought about themselves. Yes?
I find it really interesting, the difference between the Newtonian machine and quantum physics. Isn't that a flip-flop? Isn't that a great flip-flop, a scientific flip-flop?
Well, it is a huge difference, yes, because on certain interpretations of quantum physics, this sort of indeterminacy that I spoke of isn't just in your mind. It's actually in nature that the particle, say, literally does not have a precise position and momentum, that this is in nature. Now, let me add quickly. There are, however, interpretations of quantum physics which are fully deterministic. There are about 10 different physical interpretations of the equations of quantum physics, and nobody knows which, if any, of these 10 is the correct physical interpretation. They are all empirically equivalent. They all have the same mathematics, but they are different physical interpretations of what's going on. And some of them are thoroughly deterministic. They are just as deterministic as Newton's physics
were. I guess my point is here that who decides the laws of nature? Who defines the laws of nature? Because when the science says, we're right and you're wrong, I would like to say, well, you were right in 1950, but you're wrong now? How do you explain
that? Yes, that's right.
So it's apologetics to me.
Well, that's part of the progress of science, is that nature's secrets are disclosed gradually. Nature doesn't wear on her sleeve her structure. It has to be ferreted out. And this is especially true on this subatomic level. Newton's physics continues today to be an adequate description of the macroscopic realm for most practical purposes. But it's when you get to the quantum realm, the subatomic realm, that this physics is no longer adequate and needs to be revised. Now, it is true that these quantum effects can be amplified so as to produce differences on the macroscopic scale. That's absolutely correct, and I don't want to be misunderstood. So it is a huge flip-flop. The physics that governed physics, the laws of physics that governed the world, or were thought to govern the world from the late 1600s up until the early 1900s, are now regarded as obsolete. They are regarded as literally false, and a new set of physical laws has replaced them, not only in quantum physics, but also in relativity theory. Because in relativity theory, you have a different theory of time and space than Newton had. So yes, there has been a huge, huge revolution in physics that occurred during the early years of the 20th century that overthrew over 200 years of Newtonian physics. Now, the laws of nature themselves didn't change. They are independent of our apprehension of them. But what changed was our correct understanding of nature's laws. What we came to see was that Newton's laws hold within certain parameters, low speeds and macroscopic objects. But when you get it to very high velocities and subatomic proportions, then those laws are revealed, in fact, to be inaccurate, and you see that, in fact, we need a new physics. So there has been quite definitely a huge flip-flop, a huge revolution in physics in the 20th century. But what I'm suggesting is that in terms of the problem of miracles, I don't see that it's all that important. I think it gives the defender of miracles some psychological advantage, because the world machine is gone. We no longer live in this deterministic, clock-like universe where you can predict everything as Laplace thought. But, as I say, events that would be regarded as miraculous under Newtonian physics, like walking on water or feeding 5,000 people with a couple of crusts of bread, those would also be so extraordinarily improbable under quantum physics that their credibility would not be increased under this new physics that exists. So I don't think that the advent of this new physics is of much significance for the defender of miracles. Rather, I think what is significant is what I've tried to explain here about a proper understanding of nature's laws and how miracles shouldn't be thought of as violations of those laws. I'll take one more question, and then we'll close for today. Yes.
Have you seen the double slit experiment in quantum physics?
I've not actually seen it done, but I mean, I'm familiar with it.
If you watch it done, what they've determined, and when you watch it, it's kind of hard to disprove that as you're looking at it, the observer influences the action that happens in the quantum physics world. So we are part and parcel to what's going on in a macro viewpoint of physics, different from what we see here.
Right. That idea of observer-dependent reality is one of the physical interpretations of quantum theory. That's what Heisenberg thought.
Heisenberg's theory. And things can be in two places at once and in no places at once.
That's the idea of indeterminacy that I'm talking about. But what I suggested in response to a previous question, that's only one possible interpretation of the physics. I know that that's often presented in popular literature as the way modern physics has shown the world to be. But there are interpretations of quantum physics that are not like that, that are fully deterministic. For example, the quantum mechanics of David Bohm are thoroughly deterministic, and there is no indeterminism in nature. It's only in our minds that we cannot measure the exact position and momentum of a particle.
Right, but aren't our minds influencing what we're seeing and what we're watching, and perhaps lots of minds having a greater influence?
Not independently. It's not as though our minds causally impact nature and cause, say, the particle to be here rather than there. That's one interpretation.
How can you say that with any certainty, though?
Well, as I said, nobody knows which of these 10 interpretations is correct. So we don't know what's going on that quantum level. So, and that's why we need to maintain a good deal of agnosticism.
So the things that are happening could be ascribed as miracles when they weren't, since we don't know what's going on in those 10. Is that at least a possibility?
As I said, it's possible under quantum physics to say that events occur which under Newtonian physics would not have occurred. For example, I could suddenly disappear and all of my particles would quantum tunnel and reassemble on the surface of the moon. Right. And there I would be on the moon in the next instant. That's possible. But even under quantum physics, that is so unbelievably, incomprehensibly improbable that no one would take that seriously as an explanation of why something happened. Nobody in a court of law would say, for example, that the way the money got in the bank manager's suitcase is that it all quantum tunneled out of the vault and appeared in his valise as he was leaving the bank. That it's just too highly improbable. So that's why I say that while quantum physics gives some perhaps psychological solace to the defender of miracles, it really isn't going to do much in helping us to defend the probability or the credibility of miracle reports. For that, I think we need to have a different understanding of miracles that are not violations of nature's laws, but events beyond the causal productive capacity of nature. All right, next time then we'll look at Spinoza's objections and Hume's objections and how one might respond to them.
The copyright for the content of this recording is held by Dr. William Lane Craig. For more, go to reasonablefaith.org.